Ed, this is your first flight into space and our first acquaintance with you as an astronaut. Edgar Mitchell, Commander, United States Navy, Lunar Module Pilot for Apollo 14. Tell us just a bit about yourself. Where do you come from in the United States originally?
Well, Red, I was born here in Texas, in the Panhandle, as a matter of fact. Grew up in Texas and New Mexico. And since I finished my early schooling, have lived all over this country, mostly in the Naval Service. And I call Artesia, New Mexico, my home. However, I haven't lived there in over 20 years, but I still have many friends there.
Did you go to grade school there as a child?
No, I went to high school there.
And where'd you go to college? How'd you get your education?
Well, I took my first bachelor's degree at Carnegie Institute of Technology, which is now Carnegie Mellon University. I took a second bachelor's degree in aeronautics at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, and a doctorate in astronautics at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
You are a doctor of science, right?
Doctor of science, that's correct.
Now, that's in, you say aeronautics and astronautics. What does that make you an expert in?
Well,
in one brief word.
I'm not sure it makes me an expert in anything. I think it may qualify me to try to become an expert in something.
Tell me about your service career. When did you go into the Navy?
I entered the Navy in 1952. As a matter of fact, I enlisted in the Navy.
Had you learned to fly before that?
Yes. I started flying in 1945.
And you were a kid at home then, weren't
you?
Yes,
that's right. I started flying before I could legally have a learner's permit, although I flew with my uncle, and subsequently obtained a student pilot's license and the private license and the commercial license eventually. But I've been flying since 1945. I enlisted in the Navy in 1952 and entered the Naval Air Service in 1953, started through training there.
Mm-hmm. Were you flying jets before you entered the astronaut program?
Yes, I was.
Where?
Well, the last active duty Navy squadron I was in was a heavy attack squadron in the Pacific. We were flying from carriers at that point. From that, I went to test and development work at China Lake, California, before I started into my postgraduate education. And from that, from the postgraduate education at MIT, I went to a management position with the Navy in the ill-fated MOL program, and from that went to Edwards for a year with the Air Force, and then here to the astronaut program.
Ed, it impresses me that you have one of the most extensive academic backgrounds, particularly in bringing you right toward this kind of work. I'm sure it must give you great confidence in the kind of work you're doing now, doesn't it?
Well, that particular set of credentials was not arrived at accidentally. It was very planned from the first beginnings of the space program to bring me right to where I am today. And I'm very fortunate, since a great deal of luck and timing is involved, those things all worked out in addition to my plan to be here.
Well, good luck throughout the rest of the flight, Ed Mitchell. Ed Mitchell is Lunar Module Pilot. You and Al Shepard are going to be very, very busy for between 4 and 5 hours there on the first EVA. We'd like to get you just to run through it with us in your own words, a description of the things you'll be doing. Now, after you depress the cabin, after Al climbs out, first of all, you will be helping check Al out and get him out the door, won't you?
That is correct. My first task after depressurization of the cabin is to assist Al in getting out the door. I go out very shortly after that, as soon as he's down on the surface. I go out, and the two of us then do what we call housekeeping and getting the exterior of the lunar module ready for the EVA. We offload equipment, set up our television camera, get some of the consumables that need to be transferred from the descent stage to the ascent stage ready to go up. I take a contingency sample in case anything should happen. The geologists have a sample from the lunar surface. We then set up the solar wind experiment. We set up the flag, We set up the S-band antenna. Mm-hmm. And about that point, I come back into the lunar module and transfer our communications from the S-band antenna that's on the spacecraft to the one that we have just erected on the surface.
And then you and Al will get to work with that experiments package, won't you?
Yes, the next thing after I come out, I believe the flag ceremony is shortly after I come out the second time. After that, we do some photographic work. Al does some photographic work around the limb for engineering purposes, and I take the television camera, and in conjunction with the people in mission control, we kind of look at the lunar surface, and I describe it to them, and they get a feel for the surface we're on. And then we start to set up our MET, offload the
mobile equipment transporter. That's the cart.
That is the cart. We then get the ALSEP package out of the limb.
The experiments package.
The experiments package. Get it set up to traverse out to the ALSEP deployment site.
About how far away from the limb now will you move to put the central station?
Well, we would like to go a minimum of 350 feet and probably will not go more than 500 to 600 feet.
Oh, between 100 and 200 meters.
Right.
For those of our listeners who use the metric system there. Okay, and you both will go out with that and then deploy it, right?
That
is correct.
Put
out all the gadgets.
That's right.
Tell me about all the gadgets and the experiments in the experiments package.
Well, of the experiments we carry out, it is not in the package. The first one that comes to mind is the laser ranging and reflecting. That has to be carried out in addition to the ALSEP package. We pull the MET out with some of our hand tools on it. On the ALSEP itself, we have the active seismic experiment, which consists of the mortar pack and a thumper geophone line.
Mm-hmm. You're going to put some explosive charges on the surface to try to rattle the surface to make seismic measurements.
That's correct. The mortar pack will not be used until long after we've left the surface. However, we will use the same seismometers, the same line of geophones, with the little thumper device, which has 21 shotgun shell-sized charges in it,
mm-hmm.
which will be used by myself on the lunar surface.
I wonder if we'll be able to hear that on the air-to-ground conversation. Can you hear it inside your spacesuit? You can in 1G.
Well, we don't. I have never fired them inside the spacesuit. We do not fire them in practice, and those that I have fired, I have not had a suit on. Now, it is quite possible that the noise or the vibrations from the thumper can travel up my arm and through the suit and through the air inside the suit and key the box circuit in the mic. I don't know whether that will happen.
That's something we'll just have to
find
out.
We'll just have to wait and find out.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting possibility, however, but I rather doubt it.
Okay, and the rest of the ALSEP?
We have a passive seismic experiment now, which is similar to the ones that have been carried in the past.
Apollo 11 and 12 each had them, didn't they?
Right. We have what we call the SIDE.
Supra-thermal ion detector.
Right.
Yeah.
And in conjunction with that is the so-called CCIG.
Cold cathode ion gauge.
That is correct.
If I have my acronyms right.
Acronyms are very difficult to remember, even for me. In addition to that, we have, of course, the central station itself is somewhat of a phenomenon, although we have used them before. It is a nuclear power plant, which I think your listeners might be interested in. It is a nuclear power plant which puts out very few watts, as a matter of fact, but sufficient to drive all these experiments and run a telemetry station to get the telemetry back to the United States, back to the Earth.
For a year or so?
For a year or so.
Mm-hmm. Have you a new method of removing that power unit so that it won't stick? As I recall, Conrad and Bean had to hit it with a hammer to get it out.
Well, I think we've solved that problem. We had some thermal expansion problems in the unit they carried, and our engineers tell us that they have solved that, so we shouldn't have any problem with it.
Okay.
I'd like to think we won't.
And then what else will you do on that first EVA?
We have the Charged Particle Lunar Environment Experiment, a so-called CPLE, again, one of the long, difficult acronyms, which is deployed.
Okay, thanks very much, Ed, for describing the experiments package. Now, you will do some other things during that first EVA, won't you, besides deploy the ALSEP package? Would you describe them?
Yes,
after
we have completed the ALSEP deployment, we then start into a geological experiment, or really it's just a study of the geological features that we're on. It's very difficult to say we do one experiment or do another experiment at a particular time. We really do many of them simultaneously. We do a geological exploration. We pick up samples of the lunar surface. We do a soil mechanics. We do engineering evaluation of the MET, all in the same time frame. And we take documentary pictures, engineering pictures, all somewhat simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're aware, we have two data cameras, still cameras, on the lunar surface, 70 millimeters. We have one 16 millimeter data acquisition camera, which is really a sequence camera, a movie camera.
Mm-hmm. And will this be shooting short sequence pictures, a slow frame, or will it be a normal movie sequence type?
I think we're going to take one magazine at 24 frames a second, which is the normal speed. But the other five magazines will be taken at a slower speed so that we can get more data on it.
Mm-hmm. In other words, some of the pictures we'll see when you get back, we can see at normal speed. It won't make you look like a rabbit hopping around.
That's correct. And, of course, given a little time, you can technically augment those at a slower speed, and they will look normal, too. And then we have the close-up camera, which is a stereo camera with a very small field of view but very high resolution, which we will use to photograph surface objects, small rocks, footprints, or surface irregularities of any sort, which look like a new type phenomenon. Fillets around rocks. Mm-hmm. It's just a handy little camera to photograph small features on the lunar surface.
If this first EVA, extravehicular activity period, is extended, if everything is going well, if your consumables, your use of the PLIS, the Portable Life Support System, is going properly, I think I'm naming some of the parameters that would be contributing to your decision on this. How long could you stay outside during that first period?
We're looking at a total time of 5 hours.
And go through some of the considerations there, then. Review them for me.
The real considerations outside of crew fatigue, which we don't think is going to enter into it, the real considerations are the water, the oxygen, and the battery supplies and the PLIS.
Uh-huh.
Our people on the ground will be monitoring that. They will be monitoring how hard we work. And, of course, the amount of oxygen and water that is consumed is directly proportional to how hard we work. We have to keep our bodies cool down, reject the metabolic heat that is built up. If we can work at a good, steady pace, there will be no problem in going 5 hours. And this is what we really propose to do.
What part of your overall activity would you extend then? Sampling of rocks?
Probably
and dust?
Sampling, but our scientists in the Mission Control Center are preparing and have prepared real-time tasks, and it will probably involve moving some of the highly desirable items from EVA 2 into EVA 1.
Get ahead of the game.
Get ahead of the game so that we can spend more time in EVA 2 on lunar sampling.
Mm-hmm.
This is the current plan. Of course, we like to remain flexible so that if we see strange or unusual features on the lunar surface, we have time to sample, document, describe, talk it over with the ground, and do what we hope is a thoroughly scientific job of sampling and documenting these phenomena.
This is really the key to proper sampling, is the amount of time you spend and just plain talking about it back to Earth, isn't it?
That is a very important factor. We propose to use the ground and our own training in order to work out some of these problems in real time and hopefully provide an excellent description to the scientists here on the Earth, so that they can help us in real time decide what we need to do next in order to better bring back the data.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we don't find anything new or unusual that we haven't talked about, we have the procedures already set out. But we are looking forward to perhaps finding something no one's thought about. And then we have to make the real-time decisions in conjunction with the people in the mission control as to how we best sample it and record it for them to work with when we get back.
Thank you very much, Ed Mitchell, for telling us about the first EVA. This is Rhett Turner in Houston. Ed Mitchell, the second EVA, or walk on the surface of the moon for Apollo 14, is to be primarily to pick up more geological information. You're going to do quite an excursion. How about running through the procedures you'll follow?
The first thing that we will do is housekeeping. We have to spend a large amount of time housekeeping, and by that I mean stowing the mat, getting our equipment in order to take out on the traverse. The first thing I plan to do is to use the lunar portable magnetometer to conduct a survey of the magnetic field on the moon. We'll make three different measurements, measurements at three different locations during this traverse.
You just put this gadget down at three different spots and read off the measurements?
That is correct. It fits on a tripod, and it has meters that we keep on the Met. Mm-hmm. And I deploy it a few feet away, about 50 feet away from the Met.
Mm-hmm. The cart,
and go back and read the meters. While I'm doing that, Alan is doing some soil mechanics experiments for thermal protection.
Soil mechanics, thermal protection.
He has a little sample of different types of coating and materials that he is going to sprinkle dust on and photograph and brush it off and photograph in order to help the thermal people decide how much dust coating degrades the thermal protection we put on our equipment, the different types of paints, this sort of thing. And he will photograph those, also bring them back for subsequent analysis.
Then after your magnetometer experiments, you move on farther away?
We start moving on toward Cone Crater.
You're moving to the northeast of the landing site, aren't you?
Primarily east, but a little bit north of the landing site. And we move steadily toward Cone Crater, which is about 2,000 meters away.
Mm-hmm.
Doing geological sampling all along the route and describing the surface, talking with the people on the ground, in order to give them a picture of what we're seeing so that they can help us in real time decide what to sample and where to go next.
How do you decide what you want to describe and what you want to pick up?
Well, that is a result of several years of training. Hopefully, our ideas, our brains are trained to observe the proper things that will be of interest to geologists. We try to describe them to them, make interpretations as we see them, and if they have any questions, they will come back and ask us about what we're looking at.
Well, the highlight of this second activity will be around the Cone Crater area. Describe it. Describe what you'll be doing and why that's so interesting.
All right, Cone Crater is about 400 feet high, or a little over 100 meters for your listeners. We hope that of the many blocks that we can see in photographs on the top of Cone Crater, we hope to find many that are of great interest to the scientists here on Earth. In other words, our goal is to get to the top of Cone Crater and do a thorough job of sampling the rocks, the material, the soil that we find up there. We will also sample away from Cone Crater. We now know that when craters are formed on the moon, by impact, that the material is distributed away from the center of the crater in an inverse stratigraphy. That is, the material that was on top goes the furthest, and the material that was the deepest does not go so far.
So this just makes working around in the area of a crater interesting outright.
Yes, it does. And so we will sample radially. We will pick up material a long ways from the crater and near the crater and right around the rim. And hopefully by sampling in this fashion, we will provide a cross-section of all the material that has been thrown out of Cone Crater. And this is what the geologists are looking for.
Mm-hmm. You roll a rock down the side?
Yes, I think we'll do that. The soil mechanics people would like for us to take pictures of a rock rolling down into Cone Crater.
And you're going to try to drive some of these core tubes into various parts of the area you traverse also, right?
Yes,
to get a deep sample?
We have six core tubes, and we will use them. We'll put three of them together to make a single core, and then two of them together to make a double core, and we'll have one single core. So we will drive three cores of varying lengths into the surface.
What most impresses you about the overall second traverse? What's the most interesting part of it in your training? Is it the cone crater area?
I believe, from a scientific point of view, certainly, getting to the top of cone crater will provide the scientific information we're looking for, and it is also the operational challenge that will be the greatest on EVA-2.
It's going to be quite a climb. Oh, 130, 40 meters.
Something like this, yes.
And you're going to be lugging the cart with you.
Yes, and if it will not roll up because of blocks, we plan to carry it up if we can.
Thanks very much, Ed Mitchell, and good luck throughout the flight. This is Rhett Turner in Houston.